Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. So much to get to, including the fact that I need to leave my show notes open. Texas immigration, Democratic senators deeply upset. Congress has got a $1.2 trillion plan to avert a federal shutdown. But thankfully, before we get to all that national nonsense, Mr. Jason Rantz is in the studio, our very own jitterbug, causing Hello. Problems and dancing around, making all kinds of gyrations and whatnot. It's funny, Spike's been in the radio business for longer than I've been alive, still doesn't know how to turn on a microphone.
I've only got 7,200 mic turn-ons left in my life. I'm trying to use them judiciously.
So, Jason,
fair enough. I think that's actually a good response.
Time is of unlimited value, and I don't have any left.
Jason, you and I were chatting yesterday in the John Curley Memorial Refreshment Center about your ride-along and what you saw when you were riding along with the new behavioral health groups and everything that's going into that. And what you painted was from my assessment, based on what I've read and from what I've heard on various kind of Seattle subgroups or subreddits, is a very accurate picture of, I think, the problem with these kind of behavioral health units, which is, but if you want to take it from here, they're there, but what can they actually do?
Yeah, and this one is called the CARE group. This is part of that dual dispatch program where, you know, cops are dealing with folks who oftentimes, especially in this particular district, West Precinct, where you have downtown Seattle, Pioneer Square, SoTo, folks who are homeless, folks who are dealing with mental illness. There's something else wrong beyond just simply being a criminal. And so the cops have been dealing with them this entire time. And the thought is, hey, you then call a member of this CARE team. They are trained specifically to work with people who are going through some sort of crisis, and they can sort of take over so that you don't have to stay with that person for longer than you otherwise would, because you've got other 911 calls that you have to respond to.
And officers weren't often trained in those particular skill sets of mental health care?
Generally speaking,
drug addiction care, right. Okay, and that was a good supplement to law enforcement,
on
right?
On paper, it sounds great.
Sure.
In reality, however, it feels like it's destined to fail. This is a pilot program, and it's got some rules, such as none of these people can be proactive. And so that means they can't just go up to someone who's very clearly in crisis and try to help and try to offer them services, try to get them placed in a shelter if they need to. Now, if the person goes up to them, then yes, great. Thumbs up, you can actually do something. And, you know, you've got to have
officers. Have we tried Ask Me How I Can Help t-shirts on these people?
So that's the funny thing. So I was there with them, and we were going – first we were doing a walk around in downtown. It was mostly for visibility as they were waiting for 911 operators to call them to go to the scene.
Okay.
Because an officer has to call for them.
Makes sense.
Not every officer realizes that they're available, or it's not really in their muscle memory yet to go ahead and reach for it. I was there with them, I think, 3.5-4 hours. One officer called, and you know that this was not going to be a slow night. I'm sure that they were dealing with lots of folks in need, and we certainly were walking by. We end up going to this call. It was a young woman, probably late teens, maybe early 20s, and she was there was something wrong.
Right.
Very clearly she was going through something. And so, you know, they worked with her to try to get her placed in a shelter that would provide her some of the mental health care that she needed. They were talking with her very compassionately. They were on the phone while one was talking to her. Another one was on the phone trying to figure out where we're going to place her. And ultimately, it was successful. We were there for about 30 minutes or so. Thing is, the cop was there the entire time, because not a lot of officers are going to feel comfortable just completely leaving
abandoned,
you.
Yeah.
It could be potentially dangerous.
What was the initial call for the police about? Was there a violent situation or a crime?
It was not. I don't know what the call was other than a disturbance.
Okay.
We don't have access to that just in the moment.
Wow.
And the officer was there, and he was the one who had to officially give the thumbs up. to the shelter to accept her in the first place. So the cop's going to have to be there the whole time anyway if the goal is to get them into some sort of mental health treatment. Now, if it's just to connect them with a regular shelter, I don't think they have to be there. But this officer was there. And what was curious to me was I was, you know, obviously observing him interact with her as well. He was just as compassionate. He was talking exactly the way that you would expect him to talk to someone in this state. And I imagine that some cops, because I've talked to a number of them who are kind of resistant to this idea for a variety of reasons, but they're already kind of doing the job themselves right now.
Okay.
And they feel like they have to be there to oversee, in many cases, just in case. And I don't know if at the end of the day, without allowing these folks to be proactive and to really do something on their own, if this is going to be the success that they'd like it to be. Like I said, on paper, it sounds really good. Right. They mean well. They certainly want to help. I just don't think it's designed, at least right now, to be successful.
I mean, it's designed to fail, I think, really, because if you can't actually go up to somebody in crisis and talk to them. I'll give you a really quick example. So everybody knows my ex-wife works as a clinician, mental health care. And they used to do outreach at this spot. It was called The Levee, a place called Watsonville, California. Okay. And basically what it was is this huge dirt abutment right above the Salinas River where people were living in pallet houses that they had constructed. People had like chicken yards. They had developed a sewage system. I mean, it was literally a shanty town in Watsonville, California. Now, they had gotten the okay from the sheriff to go in there. But they had to call the sheriff in advance because if you take four young women who are doing clinical work and you throw them into a shanty town,
you want the sheriff.
Probably not so great. So what the sheriff would do is he would stand on top of the levee as Sarah and her crew would go down there and they would try to find any of the women there that thought they were pregnant or were pregnant. And then they would do outreach with those women to try to get them into rehab. Now, can you imagine if they try to do that job? But and the program was very successful because they were permitted to go down there and do what they needed
to
do. Now imagine that they have to wait for someone to call and say, we found somebody who might be pregnant. Can you come assess this person? Then they have to go down. You know what I mean? It's just that extra step prevents them from being able to actually do their job. And that's why I think this program will
work. Well, Jason, you said that the officer that was on this call initially seemed to know what to do and was doing, you know, acting with compassion and understanding of a mental health situation or a drug situation. I would put forth that not all the cops are there. Otherwise, this program probably wouldn't have been necessary in the first place. So if they train more officers to be more understanding, more aware, more skilled and tooled on how to deal with these folks, maybe this could evolve to not have to fail.
But see, and I think that that's an assumption because in this case, he happened to be a student officer. So this was someone who's brand new to the gig.
Okay.
I would argue that the folks who have been doing this for a while, they probably do know how to have these conversations.
Well,
I don't think it's going to be the same as being
someone who
has an education, a master's degree. Yeah. But I do think that they've been doing this for a while now. I don't think we're going from someone who doesn't know how to have a conversation with these folks at all to someone who very clearly does. There's probably, you know, on the grand scheme of things, there's some who are better than others. There's
exactly,
no doubt about that.
There's always going to be.
They've been dealing with this the entire time. And they generally feel like they have to stay there and watch it anyway because they don't want to see one of these social workers end up getting hurt or killed.
Right. Isn't part of the program that there has to be an officer on site with these crews at all times?
Initially. And they have to be the ones who call. Yep. I've been told that on some of these calls, they get called to another emergency and it all seems to be totally okay to leave these people.
This. Yep.
I don't know how often that happens. Right. You know, the folks over at the care team, it was very much a hard sell because they want me to be a big fan of this so that
you've got cops.
And, again, they mean well. They were very competent people. Yep. I would like to see something like this work. Just under the current rules, it doesn't seem like it would.
Is there the possibility that it will become they can be proactive as this program develops and evolves?
Sure. But I mean, this is the pilot program that's designed under these rules to see whether or not this is going to work. Right. Now, I don't know if at the end of this, let's say they're like, oh, maybe they should be proactive. Let's do it again and expand the rule. I don't know if that's going to work or they're just going to look specifically at this and say, eh.
Didn't happen. Yeah.
Mr. Rance, we appreciate your time, my friend. Any final thoughts before you go and do your fine radio program?
I did write over at MyNorthwest.com today about a homeless man who I saw getting chest compressions on the side of the road. And when the fire department got there, I decided to leave. But I was wondering in the back of my head, like, I wonder what happened to this guy. So I tracked down who he was. Could not do an interview with him because he died. just 30 years old. Oh. And this is someone who died on the side of the road in front of a 7-Eleven. We don't want people to go that way, of a fentanyl and meth overdose. And this is another, you know, victim, I think, not just to drug addiction. He played a role in this, but also policies that seem to be okay with him just, you know, doing whatever he wants to do. We're not going to really push into any kind of mental health or drug addiction care.
And you can go read that story over at My Northwest. Mr. Rants, we appreciate your time, my friend. You can listen to Jason Rants, 770 KTTH, every afternoon, 3 to 7, Mr. Rants. Crazy thing about it is that the majority of the show is him just singing Jitterbug. Did you know that about Jason?
Really? Wow.
He just sings
That's stamina.
He does the whole song 6 or 7 dozen times for 4 hours. It's actually really amazing. And then it ends and you think he's not going to start again. And then he starts again. But Jitterbug. It's actually an amazing, amazing series.
How can you not once the music starts?
Exactly. So pick your poison there, O'Neill. You want to talk about the $1.2 trillion budget. You want to talk about the Texas immigration ruling. You want to talk about Democratic senators pushing for a bill.
I like that one.
Focusing on local detainment of immigrants linked to violent crime. I thought Democrats were pro violent immigrant crime.
Did you forget it's an election year? Did you forget? Because that's what the Republican committee is saying, National Senatorial Committee is saying. This is all posturing because it's an election year. These guys don't really care.
Well, I mean, that is a fairly cynical way to view that. I don't really care why people do policy as long as that policy that is good policy gets initiated. So
yeah, there you go.
Like, politics is the game of cynicism. And so because it is an election year and now a group of Democratic and independent senators are saying that they want the federal government to basically have court order for local authorities to hold immigrants without permanent legal status who are charged with or convicted of violent crimes until they can be transferred to federal custody for deportation proceedings. That sounds like right wing, very conservative, very harsh policy, and it's a bunch of Democrats, right?
Now, well, these are people who have committed violent crimes. This sounds like common sense legislation. Legislation is just because it's an election year, we shouldn't do it because they're playing politics with the story. Maybe they're trying to solve an issue that's been brought to their attention by the Republican Party, and I commend them for that.
Right.
And immigration is an issue for America.
I suppose it's like, it just doesn't make any difference, you know, who gets it done or when it gets done. I just like good policy, and I think that that's the way that we should all be as Americans, so good for them on that. Now, will it go through? Probably. If I had to imagine, it'll probably get pushed through pretty quickly.
It'd be tough to stand up against this passing.
Well, I mean, unless, you know, Trump comes out against it, then, of course,
When Cheeseburger Daddy says.
When Daddy says, we're not voting on that.
We're
not going to do it. So Congress has unveiled a $1.2 trillion plan to avert a federal shutdown. Now, that was supposed to be tomorrow, right?
Friday.
And so this is funny because when Kevin McCarthy was in office, his bill was a $1.8 trillion bill.
Yep, and that was a bridge too far.
They called him a rhino. Mm-hmm. They called him an establishment swamp creature.
Yep.
And they voted him out. They said, Kevin McCarthy, it was the second or third time they've ever done this in the history of the United States. They said, you get out of here.
And that's because to get the job as Speaker of the House, McCarthy had to give all these concessions
right,
so that only one representative could bring a call to the floor to have the speaker removed. It only took one guy,
right?
One female, one rep.
So lawmakers have introduced a $1.2 trillion spending package. Now, what that means is that when people talk about a spending package, that's when they talk about the gross omnibus spending package where this district needs a fountain and this district needs a tank and then this district needs a new bridge. And so you wonder, like, well, where do our taxpayer dollars actually go? If you look at this big spending package, is basically what you're looking at. A decent amount of it goes to entitlement programs. A decent amount of it goes to weapons contracts or whatever it is.
A 3% increase in the defense budget spending.
Of course, because we got to keep those stock prices up. Am I right?
A 24% increase in the number of detention beds for people seeking asylum.
Yes.
Not just the catch and release we're always complaining about. This gives you a 24% increase in places to hold people
right,
while they're being processed.
So America has a huge debt problem, but no one really cares because modern monetary theory is kind of the economic groundwork which we operate under as Americans.
Okay.
Which is the basic way to put it is that you spend your way out of debt.
Print your way out of it?
You can't print your way out of it, but you spend your way out of it.
Okay.
Is that you just continue to spend and spend and spend and spend, hoping for economic growth as a result of that spending.
Okay.
And so you can stave off your debt payments. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
if I keep buying more houses and I keep taking out more mortgages and I keep renting out those houses, I can keep paying off those mortgages, right? It's the Airbnb model.
Okay. That's a great analogy.
Which we have been using now for the better part of, let me do the math, about 43 years.
Is this since they've taken off the gold standard?
No, the gold standard was
Reagan.
No, the gold standard was Wilson first, and then it was Nixon eventually killed it. And then, I mean, you can't blame Reagan for everything, Spike. Jeez,
I thought
give the guy a break. He likes jelly beans. Come on, dude. We can't blame Reagan for everything. Next is going to be like, oh, the Apollo missions in the 1960s. You know who fudged those up? It was Reagan the whole time.
Trying to take that monkey into space.
Exactly,
man. That kid didn't know what he was doing.
No, but so I think that like. A real disservice that many commentators do for their listeners is they say spending is out of control, that we got to rein in this spending, but they don't explain the difference between mandatory and discretionary spending. So
okay.
Mandatory spending is an example is that's written into law. There is no vote on it. It simply must be so, whereas discretionary spending sunsets and it is voted on based on the way that bill was written in the first place, every 2 years, every 4 years, every 6 years, whatever it is.
Okay.
So when people send, we gotta rein in this spending, something like 3/4 of the budget's mandatory spending. There is no vote on it. That's money that has already been allocated that shall be spent, which is why often when they talk about austerity measures in heavy quotation marks.
Right, and that's like Medicare, Social Security, those things that are
mandatory.
Yeah,
but the first on the chopping block is no new federal employees, always. That's the
really?
First thing that they do. They say no new federal employees, right? Because then they can't take out more money for the pension fund for federal employees. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
So like when we talk about economic theory or this kind of economic theory in the United States, it is a quagmire of... You know, it's bills from the 1960s, 1990s, early 2000s. There are things that are written into law that most legislators have no idea about mandatory minimum spending on this program or that program or whatever it is, adjusted for inflation. The only way that we are really going to get out of this is you got to stop borrowing against your own debt is really the real thing that the United States needs to do.
We most often borrow from China. Is that right?
We
largest holder of U.S. debt?
We sell bonds to China. They're generally 50 to 100-year bonds. And we say, we super pinky promise that we'll pay this back eventually.
Because we are the most solid bet on the planet, is the U.S. government.
Right.
We have the best record for repaying our debts.
Right.
That's why messing with a debt ceiling is such a scary thing.
Right.
Because that's what puts all that at risk.
Well, but we secret pinky promise that we'll pay it back, right? I mean, every time you take out money, that's all you have to do is...
Pinky swear.
So, and China is more than happy to take an IOU because their economy is a ghost economy as well that's propped up by fake real estate.
Really?
Have you seen this?
Uh-uh.
Everyone talks about China as this massive economic powerhouse. But if you actually look at what basically the entirety of their economy runs on is they are continually building and tearing down massive metropolitan areas.
Really?
They're ghost cities. That are designed for a million plus people.
But that's putting people to work, right? Building, tearing down.
Right.
And that's money that goes into the economy. I'm not defending the policy.
But it's not real. It's not, you know what I'm saying?
They're not really building anything. They're just kind of knocking it down to put it back up again.
Yeah, look up Chinese ghost cities, and you will see cities that are designed to house 500,000 people that have 6 or 7 people living in them that are due to be torn down because they're 10 years old.
Wow.
And then they, just a couple miles down the road on the highway system that they're always building, they have a new city that's a new urban development center that the CCP thinks that they need.
Chinese ghost cities.
So what we have is a bunch of non-existent money that's circulating around in the ether, and we're all just paying each other back with monopoly money, hoping for the best. That's basically your economic lesson of the day. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Cringer-based. Poverty pornography. I hate to use that word, but there are so many people out there who engage in this kind of entrepreneurial venture where they go to very poor places and they film it and then they put it on YouTube and they go, isn't this sad? Remember to like, comment, and subscribe. And we'll talk about why that's so wrong when we get back right after this.
Check out the Box Yard across from T-Mobile Park featuring Hatback Bar and Grill, Steelheads Alley, and Victory Hall. The Box Yard is Soto's premier pre- and post-game destination with delicious bites and brews. For more info, visit mariners.com/boxyard.
Cringe. orange?
Sure, you know, 6-7 wrecked cars, who's counting?
Or based?
I'll never buy one of those tin Lizzies. You have to crank it up and hurt your shoulder.
Oh, that's good times. So, poverty pornography is a thing that has been covered on the internet for quite some time. Have you heard about this, Mike?
I hadn't heard about it until you brought it up, and it's repulsive by name, and I did some looking into it while we were off the break there, and it's worse than I thought.
Well, so the idea is that influencers go out and they film Hell's Kitchen in Los Angeles or wherever it is. They go down to San Francisco, they go to Turk Street in San Francisco, and they film people who are living in abject poverty, and then they say, what are we supposed to, can you guys believe that this is America, is what they do. They go, I can't believe that this is going on. And then people, they remember to like, comment, subscribe, and remember to donate to, so I can continue doing this hard-hitting journalism for you guys. It's basically what Jonathan Cho does, if that makes sense. Like, I know I've been ripping into Cho a lot recently, but it's basically what you do is you film people at their absolute worst, and then you profit off of it. Is basically the way to
By
do it.
By getting clicks and like subscribers.
Right. Yeah, and then what all it really is designed to do is to make people mad. And then you hide behind the defense, which is unbelievably cowardly, of saying, hey, man, I'm out here showing what's really going on. As if people don't already know that there's a homeless problem or a drug problem or whatever it is. And the thing that I think that's the most kind of insidious and evil about it is that then you get to bathe in the adoration of people saying, wow, no one would know about Third and Yessler.
He's shining a light on the problem.
You're shining a light on the problem. Hashtag Jay Inslee. Hashtag Mayor Harrell. Hashtag blah, blah, blah. Hashtag, you know what I mean? Like,
I hear you.
And when you work in media, you see right through the facade of what this person is doing, because what they are literally doing is making a living off of the suffering of other human beings.
And they're filming these folks often under the pretense of, hey, I can... Let me tell your story. I can hook you up with services. I can get you into rehab. I can get you into a shelter.
Right.
Or worse, here's $50.
Here's $50.
Can you talk to me?
Really?
Or $20 or whatever is. Yeah. So,
which is nothing compared to the ad revenue they get off of a video.
Right.
Like that.
Is there serious money in this?
Oh, there is serious money in this. Now, there's exceptions to this, though. For instance, there's a guy who is in L.A. and he used to be a crack and heroin addict. And he started giving haircuts to homeless people so that they can have a little, and also like shower facilities and other stuff like that. He films that, but it's only under the pretense of like Christ's love. Do you know what I mean? It's not, it's not under the pretense of sticking it to LA County, man. It's under the pretense of
vote these people out.
Right. No, it's under the pretense of, you know, this is what we can do as a community, and that I am more than happy to give that guy's business money, and I'm more than happy to help that guy out in his endeavors to give homeless people free haircuts. And he also gives women, like, hygienic supplies and things like that.
Nice.
So when he asks for donations, I'm like, take my money, dude. Yeah. When other people, when these other influencers do this, the unfortunate part about it is that they know that it's part of their business model to engage with the worst of the worst and portray it in such a way that is usually like right wing in nature, trying to talk about, you know, look at what's going on. There's a guy in San Francisco who's gotten a lot of fame because what he'll do is he'll post a video on Instagram of him yelling at heroin addicts or fentanyl addicts in San Francisco. And then he usually goes to the Mission District. Okay. And then within 48 hours, he's on Fox News every single time. And then, of course, you can buy his new book and you can buy his merch and you could subscribe to his Instagram page. I don't think that we should buy into the grift that so many of these people have when they are intentionally that's why I think it's giga cringe is my ultimate verdict on this, is that it's not art. You're not contributing to discourse. You're not making anything better. Does Jonathan Cho's work make anything better? A serious question. Does his coverage of the poverty in Washington, does it change anything?
Well, I think it could. The awareness
now
of
you're
the
being
issue.
Now you're being disingenuous, Spike. Now you're being disingenuous because you don't want to say something that's going to get you in trouble. I'll say it if you want to say it, Spike. I mean, the guy goes around and he films poor people for profit. I mean, this is something that we should frown upon.
Is there any, we should say stop.
We shouldn't say, oh, well, maybe you have a good
Is there a benefit to making the public aware of the situation?
We literally just went over this. No, there is no benefit. People already know what's going on at Third and Yesler. People already know what's going on downtown. People already know that the Target gets ripped off on a regular basis.
Is there any way to stop what they're doing then?
You have to say, stop doing this because we see what your business model relies on and we see what you're doing to those poor people and we see that we don't like it. But unfortunately, you then have to convince people that that work is wrong or bad or whatever it is.
And then you get slapped because you're censoring. It's a censorship issue, right?
I'm not saying that he should be censored. That's not the argument that I'm making. I'm saying that he needs to make, or these people need to make a conscientious decision that what they're doing is, in fact, deeply immoral. Do you know what I mean?
Did I film
you when I go into the Salvation Army Rehab Center last week?
No, of course you didn't. No.
I could have gotten so much media traction out of that, walking around that great building, talking to all those drug addicts. You know, hey, keep it going, brother. I could have gotten that. Laura, tell me that video would have not gone viral.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? Me crying with a bunch of other drug addicts. You can do it too, brother. Do you know what I mean? Like, we
Here's $20.
We haven't even talked about it. We went down there for an hour and a half, and we didn't talk. It was last week. We didn't announce it. We didn't talk about it. We didn't film it. We didn't take any pictures. Why? Because
we're not
exploiting it and trying to profit off of the misery and suffering of other human beings. This is people need to wake up to the fact that the media machine is perverse in general, and it causes good moral people to do awful, immoral things in the pursuit of a Fox News appearance, an MSNBC appearance, a CNN appearance. And this is something that we should frown upon objectively.
Yeah, but to your point, there are also good people doing good work, like the guy who's cutting hair. And giving hygiene facility equipment, supplies.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people out there that are doing the right thing. These people are not. Poverty porn is not. They're not doing the right thing.
What's this thing? The guy from Soft White Underbelly? The guy from Soft White Underbelly is trying to help those people. Have you watched any of his videos?
Yeah, but doesn't he give money to people to talk to him?
He does, but he's also trying to actually help those people. So the Soft White Underbelly is a very popular YouTube channel.
Okay.
And he gives money for people to come and talk to him.
And be subject to interview.
But he's a former 35mm photographer.
Okay.
And he actually tries to help these people. You have to watch his follow-up videos where he re-meets with people. And he's like, this is them 6 months later, and this is their life now.
Wow.
It's a little bit, but he does give money for people to talk to him.
But he's got a good intent to his channel.
Yeah, I think
he's doing good work.
I think that guy does pretty good work.
Okay, good. Well, it's good to hear that there's some actors in this arena that aren't just malicious and profit-seeking exploiters of the poor.
I don't even know what time it is because we don't have a show clock anymore in the studio.
It's 1:42, Jack.
Is that? Oh, I have to look to facing the opposite side of the building.
They took away your clock, but not mine.
1:42. We'll take a really quick break. No stupid questions. 888-973-5476 is the text line where you can shoot us a text and we shall answer your question to the best of our ability. What's the deal with Botox? What about the expected surge of Haitian migrants? We can literally answer any question when we get back right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are no stupid questions.
Only stupid answers.
Ah, yes.
No stupid questions. My favorite segment of the day, Laura, because I get to interact with various interlocutors.
I thought you were going to say test this premise.
I shall test this premise and my patience on a daily basis. I shall be the proverbial Socrates to the text line's proverbial Glaucon. Isn't this so fun? Now we're all learning together. What happened to no accent mocking? Jeez, Brian, you could have just sent me an email. You didn't have to. This is our PD, Brian Buckaloo, right there, right? He's texting. And why did you send me an email, Brian? Why didn't put me on blast on the text line, dude?
Because we don't answer his emails, and he obviously knows how to get through to the show.
Second of all, the same people that are like, why do you guys always do Southern accents when you so on and so forth make fun of these people are the same people who are like, woke people ruin comedy. Woke people destroyed everything. Woke people, you can't do anything funny anymore. And then the second that I throw on this music and I'm like, man, I'm in Skagit County. I heard a big old boom sound. Sound like a raccoon done fell off the roof, landed on a pile of tin. I tell you what.
Stop canceling my little mind.
Stop canceling my little mind. It was dug out by a Jack Russell Terrier. Get on down there. My daddy thought he could make it. Find gold and diamonds down there.
That's what happened to me.
Exactly. I mean,
right there.
So I just feel like the same people who are like, oh, Trump supporters don't all have Southern accents are the same people who are like, woke people ruin comedy. You can't say anything anymore. It's just so weird. Anyway, hello, please talk about Ozempic. I don't understand why it's being demonized. It has my type 2 diabetes under control. Ozempic is being demonized because people are misusing it. So there are also people who don't need it who are getting a prescription for it because they don't want to, you know, diet and exercise.
Eat less, move around more.
Yep. And so they are misusing that drug. And so now because of that, people who actually need it are suffering the consequences of that. It's very similar to what happened to Prozac in the late 90s. Where Prozac has shown to be beneficial for a percentage of people who suffer from severe chronic depression, right?
Okay.
Very, very successful drug. There were some people who had very negative effects to it, weight gain, suicidality, whatever it is.
Oof.
And so there was this huge push against Prozac in the late 90s. Same thing with like drugs like Ritalin, things of that nature.
Okay.
Even though these drugs are very helpful for a percentage of the population, other people through misuse or misdiagnosis got their hands on that medication. It's the same cycle with medications that roll around about every 3 or 4 years. And I'm so sorry that it's being demonized, and I hope that your type 2 diabetes continues to be under control.
It sounds like what's being demonized are the folks misusing it. Right? Abusing it for weight loss when there's not enough supply for folks who literally have type 2 diabetes who need this medication.
You mean the Real Housewives?
Or the price tag.
Yeah, geez. Yeah. You mean Kim Kardashian? I mean, come on here. The people that actually need it, Spike? You mean Jason Bateman or whoever that actor was?
Is he on it, really?
I don't know. There's a bunch of people who have admitted to basically abusing it for roles because they don't actually need it, but they've been using Ozempic. I'm disappointed the Republican Party is overwhelmingly supporting Trump for president in the 2024 election. Why do you think that that is? I have a hot take of all hot takes. If you actually read about the Trump administration and you are a conservative, if you actually read about the economic policies, you would not be in favor of Donald Trump. If you actually read that information. The problem with a lot of people in the GOP, I say this with all due respect, is that they allow commentators to filter the kind of information that they get about the president that they love in the same way that CNN runs static for Biden from time to time.
Yeah, he does.
Or that MSNBC runs static for Biden. The same way that Fox News does that for so many members of the GOP. And if you actually read about Trump's accomplishments in office, some of them are good, but a lot of his economic policies are the exact opposite of what conservatives say that they want from a president. And yet there is a commentariat out there which is dependent on the advertising revenue that they get from Trump supporters. So they know that they can't be anti-Trump, because if they come out as being anti-Trump, then they lose their conservative commentator bona fides. And they effectively lose their careers. I mean, I won't mention any names, but we used to work with somebody who came out very strongly against former President Donald Trump, and he was dropped by his network. Flat dropped, right? Because he said, I'm not going to play this game. And they replaced him with someone who is so pro-Trump, it's not even funny, right? The guy's basically got a T tattooed on his chest, trying to bend over.
I think he really does. Shoes?
Just bending over backwards for former President Donald Trump. If you gave me a Trump supporter, I could make him not a Trump supporter in about 20 minutes. Objectively.
I'm sure you could. Let me ask you this. How much of it is Biden bad, Biden bad, Biden bad? From the same networks that are, you know, pushing Trump?
That's part of it.
You know, the inability to recognize economic growth or an economic upturn.
That's a big part of it. I think also, though, that there is a...
conservatives have been treated very poorly for many, many, many years by media and by politicians. And so now you finally have a guy who says, I'm fighting for you, even though he's not. And when you're that abused by the system, you will turn to an abuser. This is something that happens with people who are habitually abused.
That's basic and psychology. Yeah.
Thus, this is what Donald Trump basically has fooled conservatives into thinking, that he is in any way, shape, or form a conservative and holds their values, when he doesn't. And he doesn't really care about anything except for power. And anybody that actually bothers to read about it goes, oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. John Curley not in the building for some strange and odd reason. Andrew, where is young Jonathan Curley?
I think he's in New York. That's what I heard.
Oh, great. John gets to go on vacation.
Screw yourself.
Hey, hi, John.
Screw yourself.
Hi, John. All right, we'll take a really quick break when we get back. Life expectancy in Washington counties varies as much by 11 years. Lowest is in Clio.
No, it's not.
I'm kidding.
They're doing just fine.
On top of all that, a small town suspended its entire police force. Residents want to know why. And Biden stutter surges. That's a very mean headline from the Seattle Times into the presidential campaign when we get back right after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.